You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
It's heartbreaking when you go through friendship betrayal because the lengths that some people go to make themselves feel vindicated is actually scary. You know, like it really is concerning. It's a cause for concern. All right.
Hey, babe.
It's Aisha Christina. Nice to meet you.
This is Quality Queen Control.
What is happening?
Hello, angels. I hope you are having a great day. How are you feeling today? Thank you for spending time with me. You can be doing anything right now, but you chose to tune into Quality Queen Control with your girl, Aisha Christina Foster. So, I mean, there's really nothing new. Okay, guys, wait. Actually, in pop culture news, I was watching Real Housewives of Potomac. I am behind in the seasons, but I like that. I am now officially at the season where this girl named Angel has been introduced, as well as a British lady named Tia. And yeah, and also we found out from the previous reunion that word on the street is, what's the lady's name who has a daughter named Arabella? Stacey. Stacey Rush has allegedly hired TJ to be her love interest while she was going through a divorce with her husband. The divorce was allegedly finalized, and Ashley Darby claims that there was no record. When you get divorced, it is public record. I wouldn't know, never been divorced. But it's public record. She could not find that. Whilst Ashley discovered that, we're seeing from an audience perspective that Stacey Rush has gotten back with her husband, which I think is amazing. I'm always in support of people, you know, being happily married. And if you can make it work, then why not? But this whole TJ thing where she allegedly hired this guy TJ to be a love interest of hers, what I thought was so interesting now looking back is the storyline. The storyline was that this man TJ, again, this is where I currently stand. I don't know what the finality of it is. I don't know how it ended up. If she ended up, you know, getting justice, if the truth has changed now or the story has changed, I don't know. But just from where I currently stand in the episodes, she hired a guy named TJ to be her love interest, and she referred to him as her best friend. In addition to that, he was a radical Christian who did not believe in before marriage, okay? I thought that was such an interesting storyline that she chose to, if this is in fact the truth, that she chose to utilize now considering that she is back with her husband. But again, I do think from where I currently stand, it was interesting that she didn't even want to give him a call. If I know that someone blatantly lied on me and said that I paid them to be my boyfriend, I'm calling you in front of everybody and I'm airing you out because I know that that's not true. But she felt, and her position was that she didn't feel the need to address him. She was just going to get her lawyer involved. But then we found out that TJ was allegedly suing her because she told him that she was going to give him half of her check from the show. To be continued. Okay, that's a little bit of the pop culture drama that's been going on. Other than that, I have no idea what's been going on in these streets. And really, as of where I stand right now, I really don't care. We have a big episode to talk about today. We're going to be talking about betrayal, why it hurts so deep, and why it changes the way that you show up. So betrayal, I'm sure, well, you are very fortunate if you've never, ever experienced this in your life before. But it's not, it's beyond someone just hurt my feelings, right? It is basically violation of assumed safety, okay? The deeper the trust, the deeper your identity feels like it's rupturing, okay? And betrayal, it doesn't just hurt. It actually rewires how you move in relationships. So today we are going to be talking specifically about betrayal in romantic dynamics, in friendships, as well as family dynamics, and the psychology behind it, the root causes, and also how betrayal shapes how people show up afterward. So let's break down betrayal beyond the drama of it all. So betrayal is basically a violation of your relational contracts. Okay, that's like the big definition. So there are psychological layers of betrayal. So it's not going to just hurt emotionally. It's going to fracture multiple internal systems at once. So there's something called a trust collapse. Right? Trust is not just, I believe you. Trust is nervous system relaxation, right? Like if you don't feel safe around someone, you notice it's a visceral reaction and response that your body will have, right? So when you do trust someone, your body softens around them. You don't scan for danger. You assume this person has goodwill, good intentions for you. You build future plans with that person from a romantic perspective or even a friendship perspective on that assumption, okay? But betrayal is going to shatter that internal safety model that you have. And here's what actually makes it traumatic. So the brain basically encodes betrayal as a threat to survival, okay? So because humans, we are wired for safety, and especially relational safety, right? Our attachment systems are ancient, okay? So social rejection or deception historically meant vulnerability, right? So when betrayal happens, our brains respond with something called hypervigilance, right? Obsessive rumination. We're replaying conversations over and over again. We're looking for the missed signs. We're scanning for deception in new people. These are the natural responses to someone that has experience betrayal. It's not dramatic, it's actually neurological. So the trust collapse also extends beyond the person. So you don't just lose trust in them, you lose your trust in your perception, your judgment, and also your discernment. It is destabilizing. When you've truly been betrayed, it is destabilizing. You tend to get rid of everyone in that case, because you need to recenter and refocus on what you can actually focus on, right? The next thing you will experience, the next layer, is cognitive dissonance. And this is one of the most painful layers, I would say, because cognitive dissonance happens when you're having two conflicting beliefs at the same time. So for example, that can look like, I know this person loves me. This person also betrayed me. That's cognitive dissonance, because how can this person love me if this person in fact betrayed me? Your brain cannot comfortably hold on to both things as truth, understandably so. So it tries to resolve the tension that you are feeling. So you, and as a response, you may minimize the betrayal. You know, they didn't mean it. It wasn't that bad. You know, I think I took it too seriously. It was on me. Or you will blame yourself, or you can rewrite history, okay? Or you will over-explain that person's behavior.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, "Sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio." If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker. Because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
You know what? He did throw my things out the window and break up with me. But the thing is, I must have triggered something in him, because when he was 5 years old, his dad said he was coming by and never ended up showing up. And then his dad tried to get in his room. And so he took a chair and like blocked his dad from coming in. And ever since then, he's just had, you know, these moments of expressing his repressed anger as a child. And so I just know I have to be there for him. Yeah. You know, right? Or you tend to romanticize the good times. Uh-oh, is this hitting any of you? I hope you're being honest, okay? You can lie to me all you want, but don't lie to yourself, all right? Because accepting betrayal, it means you're accepting the version of them that you trusted may not exist, all right? That realization right there is very painful. So cognitive dissonance is why people stay, because you're holding on to two conflicting beliefs at once. And a lot of the times people are going to overexplain their behavior, or they're going to romanticize the good times. You know what? It's not that bad. We get along like every other time. Like this is, he just gets like this sometimes. It's why people go back, cognitive dissonance. It's also why people struggle to leave toxic dynamics. Your brain prefers consistency over chaos, even if the consistency is actually unhealthy. Right, exactly. The third thing, the third layer, is something called identity rupture. This looks like, was I stupid? Like, and this one cuts deep, right? Because when someone betrays you, you don't just question them. You question yourself. How did I miss this? Am I naive? Did I attract this? What did I do to deserve this? Am I too trusting? Am I not enough? Your identity as a smart, discerning, you know, person feels like it's getting challenged, right? And that is why betrayal can feel so humiliating. Not because you did something wrong necessarily, but because your self-concept was attached to your ability to discern and see things clearly, especially for high-functioning, actually self-aware woman. Betrayal doesn't just hurt the heart, it hurts the ego too, right? So you can swing into an overcorrection, because that's psychologically what tends to happen. I'll never trust anyone again, right? A form of protection for yourself. Or you can be hyper independent, right? Or you can you'll struggle with perfectionism, or you just emotionally shut down. Identity rupture is very dangerous, because if it's not healed, it becomes, I was stupid, turns into, I trusted someone who chose dishonesty. And that distinction matters, right? I was stupid, right? Instead of, I trust something, you're blaming yourself instead of, I trusted someone who chose dishonesty. But instead, you're just blaming yourself. I was just so stupid. I was just so stupid. The fourth response that happens is the shame response as a result of these situations, as a result of betrayal. So shame is different from guilt, right? So guilt says, I did something wrong. Shame says, there is something wrong with me. Betrayal actually, it tends to often activate shame, because you were vulnerable, because you defended them, because you believed them, because you invested deeply. So society reinforces the shame sometimes, right? Like, you ignored the red flags. Sometimes that can be true. You move too fast, or you should have known. Sometimes those things are true, right? So instead of processing grief, people internalize humiliation. So that shame then is going to lead to withdrawal, silence, isolation, emotional hardening, and also difficulty opening up again. Okay. But here's the truth. Trusting someone in good faith is not shameful. Being deceived is not embarrassing. All right. And loving fully, it's not a foolish thing for you to do. There are nuances to everything, right? Sometimes, yeah, some of you guys do be a little bit foolish. Who am I even kidding? But if you truly, truly, you know, trusted somebody, you can't fault yourself for that, unless there were blatant red signs and you were just choosing ignorance over intelligence. That's different, right? But if you were genuinely honest with someone and you gave them your best, you can't feel embarrassed for that. I understand it feels embarrassing, but understand you should not be. So the shame belongs and correlates to the deception that you experience, not necessarily the vulnerability. It's because of the deception that brings on the shame and the embarrassment. But these layers interact, right? Because these layers do not operate separately. They actually tend to stack up. So truth, The truth collapse happens. Then you have cognitive dissonance, and that cognitive dissonance is going to confuse you. Then you have an identity rupture that's going to destabilize you because you don't even know who you are anymore. And then the shame is going to silence you. Why would you bring this up when this is so embarrassed? And if this is unprocessed, then it turns into another stack of hyper independence, being extra guarded, control tendencies. Hello, hello, hello. Fear of intimacy. You're going to become a person that tests loyalty all the time. You start to have emotional distance from people. So this is going to affect all your future relationships. And that is how betrayal tends to shape how you show up long after the event is over. Because betrayal, of course, it hurts more when you are vulnerable. Of course, you defended the person publicly, right? It feels like they had the power over your emotional safety. But let's get to the root of betrayal, right? Why do people betray? Because that's what we really want to know, all right? There are common psychological roots of why people tend to betray. So here's the uncomfortable part. So there's obviously avoidant attachment, where people that struggle with intimacy, they may withdraw or act out instead of just communicating honestly. And then there's also fear of confrontation. People would rather lie, hide, or deceive rather than face uncomfortable situations. You're a clown and you're a coward. I just want to say, let that lay where it may. You're a clown and you're a coward. At a certain point in time, especially over the age of 25, when your frontal lobe is fully developed, you need to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. Because not only is that a major factor in growth in all aspects of life, right? Physically and emotionally and spiritually, there's no way that you can tell me you are a growth mindset-minded person when you do not do these things. When you're uncomfortable with being uncomfortable, you're not willing to go through the uncomfortability to see the growth on the other side. All right, you picking up what I'm laying down? Also, validation seeking. People also tend to betray because they need attention and approval outside of their relationship, aka cheater, 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 pumpkin eater. People also tend to betray because they had resentment that was never voiced. So silent anger then turns into secret behavior, all right? Envy, especially in friendships, all right? And I have a whole episode about that, where comparison exists under the surface. That's another reason why people tend to betray. Also, trauma enactment, repeating the familiar dysfunction because it feels normal. One of the biggest ones why people tend to betray is because they can't tolerate the guilt or the accountability. So they choose the secrecy over the integrity, right? And it's hard. To be honest, it's very hard. I understand that this is nuance to have certain conversations, especially if you are 99.9% certain of how the dynamic is going to go. I do believe that there should be discernment in, you can't just say everything in the name of being honest and transparent to everyone, because it's not always going to be received. Sometimes you are going to have to come to a point where you need to cut your losses and understand that, okay, it kind of just is what it is. I understand that it can feel really difficult because some people are just unapproachable. And at that point, let me tell you this, from an adult perspective, you have to realize what the outcome's going to be. Are we going to walk away from this situation as friends, or is this done? Because you need to decide, what is it going to be? Or in a romantic dynamic, are we going to just be done with the situation? Or like, you have to make a decision of what you know it's going to be if you bring up said thing, right? All right. Pin that. So feeling like you don't want to tolerate the guilt or the accountability, it doesn't excuse betrayal, all right? You know, understanding, this is why I love psychology, human psychology, because understanding human psychology does help you to stop internalizing someone else's emotional immaturity as your worth. It is not on you because some people have mishandled you. It is not on you that, you know, someone may have chosen to betray you. And I know that it's hard to not want to internalize those things, but that's just the truth. So some people also betray because they can't tolerate, just facing you at all. And you know what? I think one of the biggest factors with this actually is envy, because people will real life snakes. And I'm going to just leave that there because I have a separate episode on that I'm going to be doing. But let's talk about romantic betrayal. So romantic betrayal is one of the most, oh my gosh, destabilizing, because romantic partners have deep emotional access to us, right? So obviously betrayal from a romantic dynamic can look like infidelity, emotional cheating, lying, secret resentment, public disrespect, manipulation, and also withholding affection or truth. So what happens to you psychologically after you've been betrayed romantically? Well, some people, they become hyper independent. Some people, they start testing their partners. Some people become very emotionally guarded, and some just swing to anxiety and constantly cling to reassurance. And those people are extra annoying. I will tell you that right now. I'm sorry, but it's true. All right. So psychologically, what ends up happening is there is going to be a power imbalance here, because now you have an attachment insecurity.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, "Sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio." If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
Because of what happened. Again, this is just all normal stuff that you will experience in getting betrayed. There's also emotional avoidance. And then there's kind of narcissistic supply dynamics that also play into this. And it will genuinely change you, because again, you don't want this to happen to you, which is why, especially after experiencing, you know, betrayal, you do become hypervigilant. You're on guard because it's a form, it's survival. It's a threat to your survival. You have to make sure that you never experience this again. So you will go through and experience all of these things. And then there's also friendship betrayal. Okay, this one, yeah, okay. Friendship betrayal, I feel like, is deeply underestimated, because it can be just as painful, if not even more. Because friendships, you know, the friendships that we expect to be healthy are not only emotionally safe, but they have no competition. So betrayal in friendships can obviously look like talking behind your back, sharing private information that you shared with that person, subtle jealousy, making little digs, making little jabs, competing instead of celebrating you, always looking to one-up you, disappearing when you evolve. All of a sudden you're doing better and this person is nowhere in sight. Okay, passive aggression that's masked as concern. Sometimes it could even look like condescending tones as well. So psychologically, friendship and betrayal, it's going to evolve, right? First, there's that social comparison, and then there's the identity threat, and then there is unresolved insecurity. And I know for a fact we've all experienced this at some point. And it's just, it's heartbreaking when you go through friendship betrayal, because the lengths that some people go to make themselves feel vindicated is actually scary. You know, like it really is concerning. It's a cause for concern. All right. And you will just inevitably become more isolated, hyper observant. You are slow to open up. All right. Or you're protective of personal information. I think especially with the last two, that's very normal. But sometimes people can interpret that as you being harder to connect with, when the reality is you're just protecting your peace. So you have to be mindful of, in friendship betrayal, when someone is envious of you and it's disguised as closeness. They're around you because they admire you to such a degree that they are actually envious of you. So they want to be around you, hoping that they can almost swap places with you. There's also this emotional dependency that they have on you because they're trying to just consume everything about you. And then it's also a threat to their identity. People will admire you, come around you and admire you for the very things that they're going to run a smear campaign and twist around about you. They'll come around you and talk about, oh my gosh, I love your fashion sense. You're so this, you're so that. Turn around and you are no longer friends with them anymore. And it's now, oh, she copied my style. I put her on to this and I put her, enough. Really? Like, just enough. All right. So then there's something called a social comparison theory, and I want to talk about it. So humans tend to determine their value by comparing themselves to other people. So we are consciously or subconsciously measuring success, beauty, relationships, career progression, social status, influence, attention, and even emotional maturity. But here's the key. So when we compare ourselves, we tend to compare ourselves more intensely to people that are similar to us. Not celebrities, not strangers, but actually our peers. And this is why friendship dynamics can become so psychologically complicated. Okay, let's dive a little bit deeper. So there's something called an upward versus downward comparison. So the upward comparison is comparing yourself to someone who you perceive is ahead of you, right? They can inspire growth or it can trigger insecurity. So if a person does feel secure, the upward comparison could look like she's doing amazing and it motivates me. But if a person feels insecure, it can sound like, why her and not me? I don't see why she's so special. And if that insecurity is unprocessed, yeah, it can then turn into resentment, competition, subtle, you know, digs and jabs. You're undermining that person, and also emotional distance. The downward comparison is comparing yourself to someone that you perceive is behind you. Uh-oh. So this makes people feel temporarily superior or safe. All right, hear me out. This is where the betrayal happens. If a friend was comfortable feeling ahead of you, and then you grow and you evolve, you get attention, you elevate, you looking great, the comparison flips. And some people cannot emotionally regulate that shift, aka when you met them, they were probably doing a little bit better, and then you ended up doing even better, and now they can't handle it because they can't seem to get over the fact that you're now ahead of them because they were always comparing the fact that you were behind them. So instead of celebrating you, oh, they're going to minimize your wins. All right. You had something major happen. Oh, wow. Oh my gosh. Amazing. That's amazing. I'm so happy for you. It's just like so crazy that like you're making all this money now, because like I remember like yesterday, like you were like asking me for gas money, but like I'm so happy for you. Like obviously, like it's great that you're doing well. Oh, okay. Nice. Or they make backhanded compliments, all right? Or they withdraw, or they gossip like crazy. People that are jealous, they're envious, they want to do the whole, in this case, the downward comparison thing. They always want to bring up your past. It's the only thing they have to hold on to is who you used to be. And then they add some lies on top of that, right? That's the only thing they can hold on to, or their own projections as well. All right. They also tend to compete with you subtly. It's weird. It's like you all of a sudden are, I'm not getting it. Like it, is it like weirdly like arousing you that like you're looking at me like I'm inferior to you. And now all of a sudden I'm doing my own thing and there's no space for that in my life. When I tell you I experienced this to the T, it's actually insane to me. Like I remember I'm doing my own thing and it was like the person I was friends with, there was no room for me to do my own thing. She got angry at me because I didn't want to be her manager at one point. And I'm like, girl, I'm trying to manage myself. Why would I manage you? I'm also not a manager. And you're unmanageable. So bye. You know, it was absolutely crazy. And she just couldn't handle, clearly in hindsight, the fact that I was different than her and independent. And I was just trying to do my own thing. And it bothered her because she wanted to be in control of whatever. I don't know. At this point, it's just so long now. I don't even care. But she just wanted to be in control, right? So they could also sabotage, you know, your relationships. They will sabotage your relationships with other people. They'll sabotage closeness, right? And it's simply because your growth threatens their self-concept because they are insecure. You growing now all of a sudden is making them look at themselves like, well, what about me? What does this mean for me? If she's going to go here and she's going to get invited here and she's growing this massive following, I'm left behind. What is going to happen to me? If she's making all these strides, I was able to do this and I was able to do that. Now she got the car. She has the house. She has the kids. She has the marriage. Oh, they can't handle it. So why do friendship betrayal feel so confusing? Well, friendships are supposed to feel equal, right? Let's leave that there. There is this unspoken expectation of we are on the same team, right? So when that comparison energy starts to creep in, it's a violation. That's exactly what it is. So you're going to notice when your wins feel awkward to share. Please, please take notes with what I'm saying. The second you start to notice that when you're winning, you feel awkward sharing it with this person, yeah, you're on your way out, all right? They seem supportive publicly, but they're distant privately. They confide in you, but they also compete with you. How does that work? Okay. And you feel tension whenever you're doing well. I always notice when I have an unhealthy person in my life, the second I start to do my own thing, and I don't know if it's just my natural humility that I have hung out with certain individuals and my personality for some reason makes them think that they're putting me onto something. Like, I don't know. And I don't even have the heart to tell them like, babe, like this is really nothing new. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, cause I'm trying to be genuinely supportive and I don't want to like clock every single thing. I really don't. But like, something about my personality just like really makes people think that they're doing something. And I'm like, okay, like, let me take accountability for maybe how I'm showing up or maybe these are just the wrong people, you know, have been the wrong people that have been in my life in the past where it's like, they really think they're doing me like a favor somehow. And I'm not understanding the disconnect as to how that's even possible when I'm always doing my own thing. Okay. I am my own plug. Thank you. All right. So when you think about that, right, when you're feeling awkward to share and all these different things, the tension often has nothing to do with you directly, right? It's about how those people feel about themselves in proximity to you because they are comparing themselves to you. So then there's the identity threat, right? Social comparison becomes even more dangerous when somebody's identity is fragile, aka you cannot be around insecure people. It is actually deadly, right? If a friend's identity is built off of being the prettier one, being the more successful one, the one in the relationship, the put together one, the wise one, you know, the influencer, the stable one, whatever it is, right? And you begin to embody any of those traits, it's going to create an identity threat to that person. So now, and a threatened identity, oh yeah, babe, it's going to produce behavior that looks just like betrayal. So instead of saying, I actually feel insecure for some reason, and I know this is unfathomable to people that don't experience this range of emotion because, girl, I'm right with you. I don't get it. And what a blessing it is for me to not get it, all right? They may start unconsciously creating distance, or they might diminish you, they might compete with you, or they will actually break your trust.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio. If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
Yeah. You know, and the weird thing about friendship betrayal is sometimes it's not even about hatred, but it really is just all about the comparison. And then sometimes that comparison does lead to hatred. It's like some people love the frenemy type of competition. I don't. So you can really take that to the bank. I don't do frenemies. I don't want to do the nice, nasty and, oh my gosh, like love that for you, sis. Good for you, girl. Oh my gosh, love that. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't. I want to be genuine with my friend. I don't want to have to think about being calculated on how I'm going to say this to this person and say that to that person. You're done. You're finished. So comparison obviously becomes very dangerous when your self-worth is very fragile. And we all know comparison is the thief of joy anyway. So especially if you're a high-achieving woman, right? Like us, we are high-achieving women. So in your, especially in this space of being high achieving, you know, where there's growth, there's visibility, there's evolutions, friendships are going to shift. So when a person grows rapidly, let's say in their confidence, in their standards, in their faith, in their visibility, in their boundaries, it can definitely disrupt the relational balance that you have in some of your pre-existing friendships. And if both people aren't secure enough to grow simultaneously, then the comparison will quietly erode at the connection because now you're too distant from that person of, okay, you guys maybe had the same circumstance and now you shot up here and the person is still in the same place. So that's what's going to disrupt the relational connection. So what is the aftermath of the social comparison? So when somebody realizes a friend betrayed them, let's say out of envy, it can create a lot of distrust in female friendships. You will withhold your success from people. And I will be honest with you, that is something that I've done. Like, I don't like talking about the things I accomplish or the things that I get because there's always this like chip that I would have on my shoulder of like, and I still do sometimes, if I'm being honest, of I don't want to ever come across like I'm making someone think I'm better than them. But I know I've been conditioned to feel that way because of my experiences growing up and me wanting to feel accepted by all people, and which obviously is not possible, but just wanting to be accepted by whoever I was around and for them to know that I'm coming from a place of love and I'm not trying to, you know, be braggadocious or anything like that. And the irony is, in hindsight, it did not preclude or prevent me in any capacity from still being betrayed, from being lied on, lied to, lied about, smear campaigns, all the things. No matter how kind I genuinely tried to be, it didn't prevent any of these things from happening to me. No matter how much I did not brag, it did not help me in any capacity. And I'm not saying to do that, but it's just natural accomplishments and things that I would have going for myself. I find that I would just not mention them because I almost have it in my head of why would they be happy for you? You understand what I'm saying? So, all right. Yeah. You will definitely play small so that you can stay comfortable. You undermine yourself so that you can be comfortable around someone. That's another way you know, okay, like, you know, we're done, right? You also have hyper independence, right? Or you're very emotionally guarded. I know the second I start to feel like I don't trust you and I have to filter the things that I say to you because I just all of a sudden feel unsafe, you're done. And that's sad because growth should not cost you your community all the time, you know? And obviously it depends. Like, I am a believer in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. And luckily I didn't lose friends because of it. There were surface level connections or connections that I didn't really care for that deeply that may have been impacted, but my core friends are still my core friends to this day, all right? But your growth is sometimes or a lot of the time or every time going to reveal who was connected to you and who was actually competing with you, right? I remember having this feeling with a friend of mine in the past. I remember thinking like when I get to a certain level, I'm so curious to see how this person's going to respond. We never even made it there because I was done well before then. But yeah, I understand. Now let's move on to family betrayal. So Family betrayal can look like emotional abandonment, gaslighting, the lack of protection, and siding with your abusers, or having conditional love. So family betrayal is different, obviously, from romantic or friendship betrayal, because family is your first experience of safety. Hello? So before your partners, before your friends, before the world, your nervous system learned what it was, what love was like through the lens of your family. So when betrayal happens in a family system, it doesn't just hurt, it becomes structural. Yeah. So now this becomes your attachment style. So our attachment style, as we know, is formed early in our childhood. So if the people that were supposed to be protecting you, believing you, defending you, comforting you, and telling you the truth dismiss you instead, gaslight you, side against you, or emotionally abandon you, yeah, your brain is now going to encode this as the core belief, all right? That love is not safe. That's what your brain now knows, is that love is not safe. So this is going to create an insecure attachment pattern where you can have an anxious attachment, where you have the fear of abandonment, which is also is cousins with fear of rejection, right? Oh my gosh, if they leave, and this is the thing, you become a bottomless pit, unfortunately. Because these things should have been properly developed in your childhood. I'm not blaming anyone for it not being, obviously, but you become a bottomless pit, all right? And the thing about the anxious attachment too, it's exhausting. I'm sorry, like I have been around so many people with the anxious attachment style and it just like, I can't. Respectfully, I can't do it. It creates anxiety in me that I don't even have, where I'm feeling overwhelmed, consumed, like I'm reporting to you, like you're my guardian, like you're consuming me too. Like it's just, it's all too much. Everything is a production with you. And I'm not sitting here trying to blame anybody, but you need help, okay? And then you can't even make autonomous decisions because you're now having to factor in how does this land to this person? I can't even live my own life because you're worried about feeling abandoned and rejected by me. What's happening? Stop it, please, okay? Don't annoy me. Then you also have an avoidant attachment, and this is the fear of dependence. You don't want to rely on nobody for nothing. And I get that, girl. I do. I really, really do. It's all done out of protection. And if I may, I think out of all the attachment styles, sometimes avoidant is the best one. I'm kidding, but maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm not kidding. Okay. And then there's also the disorganized attachment. And this is like that. Oh, this is like a nightmare. It's like that push-pull chaos sort of dynamic where people love those cat and mouse games. They love the up and the down. And I believe that the disorganized attachment style directly corresponds with all of them. I believe it's like an amalgam of the avoidant as well as the anxious, et cetera, et cetera. So you may unconsciously be recreating familiar dynamics because they feel normal to you. Right? So it's not necessarily because you may like the dysfunction, but it's because your nervous system simply recognizes it. That's what it boils down to. So there's gaslighting and then there's the reality distortion, right? So when you in a family dynamic with betrayal, this often includes subtle or even overt gaslighting. So the examples can look like that didn't happen, or you're too sensitive, or you're being dramatic, or you're misunderstood, or why are you always the problem? Over time, this will create self-doubt at a foundational level, all right?
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio. If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
You don't just question others. No. You're going to question your own memory, your own perception, and also your emotional responses. You have no trust in yourself. All right. Because the gaslighting, foundationally, at your core, it was rocked. So now this leads to you over-explaining yourself. This leads to difficulty setting boundaries, aka people pleaser, fear of being too much. Ooh, I had that one, girl. Bye. Accepting blame quickly, or chronic guilt. I'm reading myself for filth sometimes with some of this stuff. It's crazy. Okay. But because your emotional truth was denied early, all right, which sets the core and the foundation, of course, asserting yourself later is going to feel unsafe. You never learned how to do it. And then there's also loyalty versus self-abandonment. So in family systems, loyalty is often valued above honesty. I know you guys know that's true. So please, I don't want to hear it. We all know the, oh, blood is thicker than water thing. All right. So you may have been taught family is everything. Blood is thicker than water. Like I said, we don't air business out. Respect your elders no matter what. So now when betrayal happens to you inside your family, you feel trapped because who are you going to talk to? If you speak up, you're disloyal. If you stay silent, you betray yourself. Obviously, use discernment in this. You don't just go, because I'm sorry, like to me, certain things you just simply don't bring up because it's just going to, and again, I'm not talking about abuse or anything like that. I'm talking about disagreements and all these different things. You have to be discerning of who you're telling what to. Because at the end of the day, your family is still going to be your family, right? So you have to make a decision on what I'm about to tell this person. Am I okay with the consequence of maybe this getting back or my relationship permanently being severed because of what I'm going to share, yada, yada, yada. So there is nuance to it. It's very complicated. I understand that. So people who learn to self-abandon, right? They want to preserve belonging instead. So it becomes performative. So that's going to create adults who tolerate disrespect. It's going to create adults who struggle to go no contact or low contact. It's going to produce adults who feel guilty for protecting themselves. Uh-oh. It's going to create adults that stay in harmful situations out of obligation because you were never taught to just actually feel what you're feeling and being able to understandably act on that and have space to process what's going on. So that's why family betrayal is very complicated because the separation literally feels like you were losing your identity. So there are a couple wounds here too, like the unprotected child wound. And this is one of the most devastating forms of family betrayal. It's the lack of protection, right? So this happens when abuse was ignored. This happens when harm was minimized. This happens when you were not defended. And this also happens when someone chooses comfort over your safety. So the wound then becomes, I am not worth protecting. So that belief obviously can follow you into adulthood. And then as a result, it's going to show up like you're accepting poor treatment in relationships. You're struggling to advocate for yourself. You are feeling invisible. You are hyper independent and it's giving, I'll protect myself or no one else will. And hyper independence often looks strong on the outside, but underneath it's really just a child who learned that protection was just not guaranteed. So you're going to probably be someone that's going to be very, very defensive. And then there's also role assignment in dysfunctional families. So family betrayal can often include rigid roles. So you're the scapegoat. You're the one that's blamed for everything, all right? Or you're the golden child. You have this pressure to constantly perform. Or you're the peacekeeper. So you always have to be the one that's, you know, mediating. Or you're the parentified child. Yikes. Oh my goodness. Where you're emotionally responsible for the adults. Or you're the invisible one. Yeah, she's in the corner. No one ever knows she's there. Okay. Yeah, these roles genuinely become identity templates. Sure do. So if you were the scapegoat, you may over-defend yourself now. If you were parentified, you may over-function in your adult relationships. If you were the invisible one, well, then you will struggle to take up space because in family betrayal and, dynamics, it doesn't just wound you. It becomes like the blueprint and the structure and for your life. It basically scripts you. Family betrayal is especially painful because we expect unconditional love from our family, right? But unconditional love is not the same as unconditional access. Please understand that, right? We owe people love, but we do not owe them access to us, especially when they have done a little bit too much, right? So faith does not require you to stay in harm's way. This is something that I battled with genuinely for so long because I really could not understand what forgiveness looked like and whether or not I should still be in communication with certain individuals. But then I realized, no, I can love from a distance and I don't owe you access back into my life. You've done too much. So forgiveness does not enable dysfunction, right? And honoring your parents also does not mean dishonoring your boundaries if you're in a situation where you probably do have to make a tough call with that. Sometimes God is going to heal you by revealing the truth about what you just simply normalized, right? And sometimes the distance, it's not rebellion, but it's actually restoration. You need time to withdraw, all right? So if, you know, betrayal in your family, it's going to shape all your future relationships. So if it's unhealed, like I said, you will over-tolerate the red flags. You will be drawn to emotionally unavailable partners. Please understand me when I'm saying this. You will confuse chaos with chemistry. You will feel guilty for having boundaries. You will have a fear of abandonment. You will overfunction in friendships. You will attract people who also need saving, right? Because your nervous system is seeking, again, what is familiar, not what is healthy. This is why having awareness is very powerful, right? Understand what your attachment wounds are, all right? And never confuse loyalty with self-abandonment, right? And then understand the long-term behavioral shifts that tend to happen. You will overfunction. You will people please. Like I said, you will have the difficulty setting the boundaries and you will accept unhealthy treatment as something that is normal. So, like I said, after you experience betrayal, yes, you are going to experience hyper-independence. You're going to probably want to test loyalty. You're going to avoid vulnerability. You may want to control situations to feel safe. You want to, you know, you'll struggle to fully relax in relationships. I would say that healing is learning how to protect yourself without losing your softness. That there's a delicate dance and it's a delicate balance because betrayal can actually make you wise. Obviously, none of us want to go through it, but it definitely makes you wise. Bitterness, however, is going to make you isolated. So I want to end with this. Healing from betrayal does not mean that you are pretending that it didn't hurt, okay? It doesn't mean that you have to rush into forgiveness without your boundaries. It also does not mean that you should reopen doors that God has closed for your protection, okay? So discernment is not bitterness, all right? Guarding your heart is not closing your heart. So sometimes betrayal, it's going to reveal where you placed your trust instead of where your foundation truly belongs, and that is in Jesus Christ, okay? So remember this, forgiveness is about releasing the weight from your spirit, okay? And reconciliation is gonna require safety, accountability, and also change. You are allowed to heal slowly. You are allowed to rebuild your trust intentionally if that's what you choose to do. You are allowed to become more discerning, all right, without becoming disconnected, right? Because at the end of the day, betrayal may change how you show up, but healing decides who you are going to become after it, all right? So if this episode has resonated with you, I want you to share it with someone who needs language for what they have experienced because we've all been there. And hopefully we will never be there again. But such is life. Anyways, I hope you guys give this a 5-star rating. Make sure you guys hype up the video if you have the ability to do so, or just give it a thumbs up. Make sure you are subscribed. Make sure your notifications are turned on. And with that being said, do not forget that I love you and God loves you. I'll speak to you beautiful angels in my next episode. Mwah.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Boto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.